A Simple Thing, written by Iridan, read by Marianas. Chapter 33, Nasare. Din woke before Boba, for once, blinking a dream out of his eyes as thin gray light crept into Boba's rooms with the breeze, and Boba made a deep, rumbling sound, his face smashed against the back of Din's neck. Din wasn't sure what had woken him, the light or the dream or Boba. The dream was fading already. Din couldn't even remember if it had been a good dream or a bad one. All of his bad dreams lately had ended up with Din jerking awake, a weapon in his hands. But right now, his hands were empty. He'd been running, Din thought, in the dream, but that was all he remembered about it. Weird, Din thought, letting his eyes against the dawn. It wasn't so bright, not really, not compared to how bright a Tatooine night could get when all three moons and the stars were out. But Din still half wanted to turn his face back into the pillow and sleep until Boba made him get up. Boba's arms were warm around his middle. Din's body drank in the feeling of Boba's skin. It would be easy, for once, to just close his eyes again and slip back into his dreams. But Din had never been one for lazing around in the morning. As much as he wanted to roll over, tuck his head under Boba's chin, and go back to sleep, Din knew that he wouldn't be able to. In sleep, Din could ignore the state of his body, his pains and aches, most of them pleasant, but still aches, and the sticky feeling of cooled sweat down his back, the faint burn between his legs, the bite bruise set against his shoulder blade throbbing with every sleep-slow pulse of Din's heart. All of these little hurts were still little for now, distant and dreamlike almost, like Din was half asleep on the Razor Crest and soaring through hyperspace, watching the stars stream by with half-lidded eyes. I'm gonna feel them sooner or later, though, Din thought, hauling himself out of that sleepy, starry space inside his own head with some effort. Slowly, moving carefully so he didn't wake Boba, Din stretched. His left shoulder was still sore where Paz had tossed him to the ground. His side ached. But the rest of him was loose and warm and comfortable. For once, stretching just felt good instead of necessary. Din didn't need to roll his shoulders out to make sure he had the full range of motion in his arms. Didn't need to stretch out a stiff cramp in his legs to stand up without falling over. If that was a realish massage, Din thought to himself, remembering the way Boba had worked Din over, then maybe the Twi'leks are onto something. Despite what Boba had implied, Din was pretty sure that not everything he'd done last night had been something he'd picked up in a bathhouse. Even here, in the quiet intimacy of the early morning, thinking about what they'd done, where Boba had put his mouth, what he'd done with his tongue, made Din blush faintly. He knew that Boba had probably done it to shock Din a little and to hoard another one of those little moments that Boba seemed to like so much, those moments where Boba coaxed Din into something Din had never experienced before. I don't mind, not really. Din certainly hadn't minded last night. He could still feel the shadow of Boba's cock moving inside of him, torturously slow, deep enough to taste. Boba's tongue pressed against the heat of Din's body. The way Boba had said, "Jatisish." Din's cock gave an interested twitch. No, Din told himself firmly. He was not going to get himself off like this, wrapped up in Boba's arms, the sheet still a little chilled and damp from the mess they'd made last night. And I don't want to wake Boba up either. Boba was like Din. He was a light sleeper. That he had stayed sleeping through Din stirring awake, stretching out, shifting in Boba's arms, meant that Boba was tired. He slept even less than Din did, usually. His body needed the rest more than Din needed to get off again. A few regular orgasms, Din thought wry, and I get greedy. He'd survived for years on his own without a partner, and he'd never had a partner like Boba. Din had treated this particular function of his body, arousal, orgasm, much like he treated his blaster or any of his other gear. something that needed occasional attention to keep everything in working order, but no more than that. Not necessary, not something to indulge in. I'll survive, Din told himself. Still moving as slowly and as carefully as possible, Din made himself leave the warmth of Boba's arms, shifting over to the edge of the bed and quietly levering himself up to his feet. Once he was upright, Din glanced back at Boba. Boba's expression, oddly peaceful in sleep. He looked years younger like this, his scar soft and smooth, his jaw dark with early morning stubble. Creased for a moment, Boba's fingers flexed. But then he just rolled over into the warm spot left by Din's body, made a faint waffling sound, and dropped back off into a deeper sleep. Din smiled. Boba was... Din didn't know what the word in Mandoa would be. Meshla wasn't quite right. Boba was too rugged, Din supposed, to be considered pretty. There was really nothing pretty about him. Boba's body was crossed with scars and bruises. His features were strong. Handsome? Din wondered. Boba was certainly that. Din very rarely paid attention to what a being looked like, but it was hard not to with Boba. Here, with Boba asleep and Din wrapped up in the privacy of Boba's rooms, he could admit to himself that Din was maybe a little biased, but he thought that Boba was very handsome. Arresting. Din never got tired of seeing Boba's broad shoulders or his thick legs, the sheer muscle he carried, the strength that rippled underneath Boba's padded belly. Is there a word in Mandoa for beautiful? Din would never ask, of course. It'd be more embarrassing than having Boba's tongue in his ass. It would show Boba too much, more than Din wanted him to see. Still, though, Din thought, finally making himself tear his eyes away before Boba could wake up and catch him looking. Maybe Strill knows a word. Din wanted to let Boba sleep for as long as possible, so he slipped into the lift, cursing as it chimed softly like it was conspiring against him, and took it down to his own room, where he hopped into the Sonic, dug out a fresh set of clothes, and then set off to find something to eat. That feeling of flying through hyperspace didn't really leave Din as he made his way down to the kitchens. The feeling of weightlessness, of being pulled along. Din was still aware, he supposed, of the palace around him, but it was almost like watching the palace go by from behind a thick sheet of Umbaran glass. Everything was muted and calm. It wasn't quite like the muffled, tranquil space Din could find during a flogging, but it was different from the way Din usually felt as he moved through the palace. He was still aware of what was going on around him, though, still felt like he could fight in a heartbeat if he had to. So Din wasn't bothered by the strange sensation. He let it buoy him up, keep him moving. The palace was very still and very quiet. None of Boba's guests had been invited back to stay. They were a few days past Gorga's failed attack now, but the palace's halls and guest rooms, its dens and grottos and meeting places were still mostly empty. The noise and the bustle that Din had gotten used to, the constant parade of smugglers and dancers and bounty hunters and more, had cut out entirely. There were still guards posted around, though, standing watch in the long hall between Boba's tower and Jabba's, more lining the path between the throne room and the kitchens. Din skirted most of them, avoiding what were usually the palace's busiest wings and corridors, and made his way into the kitchens without any trouble. As far as I know, nobody's figured out yet how Gorga and his people got in, Din thought. He didn't know if Fennec's guards and spies had found whatever gap in the rotation that had let Gorga's merc slip through. Din had done his part, even though he hadn't yet been able to dig up the hut's Nexupaw and Mos Eisley. He knew that Gorga's little army had staged itself out of the Jundland Canyons. But as to how they got from there to here, Din thought. Even if that particular gap in the palace's armor hadn't been patched over yet, the increased guard patrols had kept the palace secure overnight. Din didn't see any sign that another raiding band had tried to mount an attack while Din and Boba had been sleeping. Good, Din thought, as he stepped into the kitchens, immediately surrounded by their familiar warmth, by the smell of fresh bread and cooked spices. Boba deserves the chance to rest. It was hard to hunt, or defend a stronghold, Din supposed, on little sleep. The more rest Boba got, the sharper he'd be when Gorga inevitably came back. Din caught sight of Ushib hard at work, stirring a large dented nuha pot with a wooden spoon. The air, as Din stepped towards her, smelled sweet and warm, like kur and habu and karkum roots. Din's eyebrows went up. He put thoughts of guard rotations and hut attacks out of his head. "What are you making?" Din asked, once Ushib had caught sight of him. "Do you need help?" Ushib waved him off with one hand, her other still stirring her pot. The scent of karkum root, a sort of biting Marada plant that only grew in Tatooine's mountainlands, grew stronger. "Yes, the catch," Ushib replied, "for a first meal." Din brightened. He liked regular Yazda, Tuscan porridge, filling and sweet, just fine. But Yazda Kach was special. "What's the occasion?" Din asked, drifting even closer. He wanted to stick a finger into the pot and steal a scoop of the porridge, but was wary of getting within range of Ushib's spoon. She was as dangerous with it as a Jedi was with a lightsaber. From this angle, he could see the deep golden color of the porridge, could smell its sweetness, but wasn't at risk of getting whacked across the nose. "No occasion," Ushib told him, "but it will be good for the spirit." She touched her chest, indicating her second heart. "Good for strength, too," she told Din. "We are all tired. This will help. Did the White Bantha make it for you when you stayed with them?" "A few times," Din said. Alhama had made it once to celebrate the start of a new year after the moons had vanished together and then returned one by one. And Timirja, Aven's wife, had made it to celebrate the birth of her first son. "That kid's probably a blooded warrior himself by now," Din thought, surprised. Ushib had said that Aven, the White Bantha's chieftain from the old days, was still their chief, which was good. If a chief managed to hold on to his Gaderfi for almost 20 years, it meant that his tribe was healthy and strong. "That kid's probably hunting crates and leading raids." "Is Boba awake yet?" Ushib asked, her broad gestures drawing Din out of his thoughts. He shook his head. "Still sleeping," Din reported. "I came to get something for us to eat." Ushib made an approving noise. "I made bread and tea," she said. "This will be done in a moment. Start some calf, will you?" Pleased to have something to do, Din nodded and did as Ushib asked. A simple task like this, starting calf, gathering food for a meal, let Din slip back easily into that tranquil space that felt like running a hyperlane. Thoughts and sensations and observations flashing past him like blurred stars. Din was used to drinking calf from cantinas or the battered percolator he'd rigged up on the crest using spare engine parts. The gritty, instant kind of calf, a badly ground powder that never fully dissolved no matter how hot Din managed to get the water. Proper Tuscan calf, like proper Tuscan tea, was a bit more involved. In the desert, Din would have used hot sand to heat it, but Ushib had a hot stovetop in the kitchens that worked just as well. Din prepared several small metal cups for Ushib to use later, then took one, added water and the finely ground calf, also from the mountainlands, and heated it over the hot stovetop until the calf inside foamed rich and dark. He poured that calf into a mug for Boba, helped himself to a cup of tea, and then began to load a tray with Jaipur bread and fruit and honey, swinging back around for two bowls of Yazda Kach when Ushib made a satisfied little sound and beckoned Din back over. "How is Boba?" Ushib asked, once she'd filled both of Din's bowls. "Injured? I've hardly seen him since the raid." "No," Din assured her out loud, since his hands were full of food. "He took a few bruises during the attack, but nothing else." Ushib grumbled. "And you?" she asked, finger sharp. "I'm fine," Din promised. He was. Sore, yes, but his injuries were healing, even the gash on his arm that Ushib had stitched up, and with a few more days of Bacta, Din would be fine. "You do good work." Ushib snorted, which Din took to mean, "Of course I do." "And your other injuries?" Ushib asked, shrewd. "The ones you didn't want to show me?" Din flushed. They're fine too," he said. He cleared his throat a little. "Healing," he assured her. Ushib snorted again, but seemed satisfied enough. "Be off with you then," she said. "The night shift guardsmen are finishing soon and eat like starving Anuba." Din nodded, thanked Ushib for the meal, and then made his escape before she could ask any further questions about his other injuries, or worse, ask to see them. "They are all healing," he thought, balancing the tray in his hands carefully. "It's just personal, that's all." Those marks, the soreness between Din's legs, the teeth imprinted into his shoulder, were for Din. Maybe for Boba, too, if Boba asked to see them. They weren't for anyone else. Ushib let Din go, though, and Din made it back up to Boba's rooms without incident. Boba was even still in bed when the lift opened and Din stepped back into the room. He stirred a little when Din came around the edge of the central pillar and set their food down on the work table, but his back was facing Din and Boba didn't roll over any further. Din set everything down, very quietly, then folded himself into one of the chairs at the table, helped himself to a few sips of tea and some food, and let himself sink fully into that pleasant slipstream in his head. "Do I feel like this because of Boba? Because of what we did?" Din had figured out from the first time Boba had laid a hand on him, in the kitchens after their first spar, when Boba had set his hand against Din's throat and held him there, that what he and Boba did affected Din more than it affected Boba. The point of it all was focus, Din was pretty sure. Boba had agreed to all of this because it, pain specifically, helped Din focus, cleared his thoughts, made him sharper. But this, whatever this was, this blurred feeling, wasn't quite the same. When Boba flogged Din, most of Din's thoughts fell away. His concerns, his doubts, everything. He usually felt like he was floating or flying, drifting through space. And then Din would fall asleep and wake up. Fine. Unchanged. I don't feel like I'm floating, Din thought. He was still aware, he supposed, of what was going on around him. He'd been able to hold a conversation with Ushib. If Din reached hard enough, he could pull himself out of his pleasant haze and reach for his pile of concerns. But they're not staring me down, Din thought. For most of Din's life, the things he'd worried about had stared him in the face, like a crate dragon coming out of its cave. Concerns had been immediate and pressing. I need to protect the kid. I need to stay ahead of Moff Gideon. I need to bring some clink back to the covert today so none of the foundlings go hungry. I need fuel to get from this planet to that one. But right now, as the light in Boba's room started to shift, Din was removed from all that. He still had things to worry about, of course. Gorga had attacked the palace and almost certainly was going to do it again. Paz and the others needed to be brought somewhere safe. Din still hadn't told Boba what Bo-Katan Kryze had wanted up on the light cruiser. Din hadn't seen his kid in weeks. If he reached for it, Din could bring all of that back up to the front of his thoughts. But, he thought, slow and wondering, I don't have to reach for it. Din could leave those worries where they were for now. He could move past them, above them. His thoughts were clear and bright even as they were wrapped up in that distance. Did Boba do that? Din wasn't sure how to ask. What does Boba feel like after we do this? What did Boba get out of it? Control, he'd said, but did that taking control give Boba this feeling of peace? Din wondered. That's what it was. What was wrapped all around him, why he thought of being half asleep on the Razor Crest watching the galaxy blur past in hyperspace. Din had been at peace then. He was at peace now. Is that why Boba's sleeping so well? If it was, Din felt that he'd earned the little flicker of pride that curled warm in his chest, licked the bottom of his ribs. I will have to ask, he thought. He wanted to know. He wasn't sure how to ask yet, but Din had the time to think about it. He had the time to use this calm focus to solve a few other problems, too, without staring them dead in the eye. Gorga's mercs knew enough about the Jundland Canyons to use them effectively, Din thought, taking another sip of tea. So, have any of them been on Tatooine before? Din hadn't seen every merc that had joined in on the raid, but he'd seen a fair few. Had killed a fair few, too. There were millions of mercs out working in the galaxy, of course, but I do know someone, Din thought, setting his mug down, who keeps a file on just about everyone he's ever met. Boba's stack of datapads was just as untidy as ever, piled precariously near the edge of the work table. Din helped himself to a handful of them, discarding any that were logistic records or maps of trade routes, and started looking for something, Din thought, in between bites of Yasta. I'll know what I'm looking for when I find it. The suns continued to rise over the desert, dawn continued to break. The light in Boba's room shifted from gray to pale blue, then to pink, then to gold. Din finished his bowl and kept scrolling through his heap of data pads. He'd discarded two, not recognizing any of the names and faces in them, and was in the middle of a third when Boba finally stirred and rolled over for good. Din looked up, saw Boba blinking at him, expression confused, soft with sleep, and smiled. "Sakui," Din said, lifting his mug. Boba stared at him some more. Din raised an eyebrow. "Well," he prodded gently, "you gonna sleep all day?" That finally got through to Boba, pushed past whatever haze of sleep and confusion he was wrapped up in. Boba sat up, coming awake all at once like a proper soldier in the field, and dragged a hand down his face. Even from across the room, Din could hear his hand rasping across his early morning stubble. "Kirk," Boba finally said. His voice was rough and low. Faint arousal flickered in Din's belly, which Din did his best to ignore. "How long have you been up?" "Not long," Din assured him, smiling a little. Din got the feeling that Boba liked to be the first one up and about, usually, even though he'd never joined Din, Fennec, and Nora for her first meal in the throne room. Boba eyed Din for another moment, then heaved himself up out of bed. He hadn't bothered to find clothes before collapsing into bed last night and pulling Din flush against his chest, so Din was treated to the pleasant view of Boba's skin and his body and his scars, his broad shoulders, his powerful chest, his cock swinging low between his legs. More arousal, not quite so faint this time, twitched in Din's belly. The view, unfortunately, didn't last long. Boba stretched, rolling out his shoulders. The arousal in Din's gut flared hot, and then padded into the fresher, swiping a pair of pants off the floor as he went. Din gave his attention back to his tea and his data pad, trying not to be disappointed. He heard the familiar rattling sound of Boba's sonnet coming to life, and then Boba stuck his head back out of the fresher door, one cheek creased with the pattern left by his sheets and pillow, and said, "Well, wanna join me?" Din had already been through a sonic this morning. His breakfast would get cold, his tea bitter. But Boba was looking at him with an eyebrow arched, expression patient and a little bit fond, and Din decided that he didn't care about a bowl of cold porridge or a cup of bitter tea. He joined Boba in the fresher. Boba was on Din immediately, sliding his hands up underneath Din's shirt, pressing in for a sweet kiss. Din let him. It was easy to let him. Boba broke the kiss to nose at the line of Din's jaw, hands roaming greedily over Din's ribs, and Boba herded them both clumsily into his tiny sonic. Din bumped his head on the wall, and Boba whacked his elbow, murmuring a curse into Din's throat, but neither of them cared. Boba pushed until he'd crowded Din against the back of his sonic, the vibrations rattling Din's teeth, Boba's teeth against the column of Din's throat. And then Boba kissed Din again, wet and filthy, and Din opened into it with a moan, opening his legs to let Boba press in close. This, Din thought, dazed and starving suddenly, his whole body sparking to wakefulness, is a nice change. He'd liked what Boba had done to him last night, he wasn't ashamed to admit it now. It had been strange, Boba's mouth, Boba's tongue, the slow, inexorable pace Boba had set with his fingers and his cock. But this was even better. Din felt like Boba was going to eat him alive. Boba broke their kiss again to pant against Din's neck. His breath made Din shiver, his body flushing cold, then hot. Boba was hard against Din's thighs now, rolling his hips a little, and Din's cock was rising to meet it, even as Boba's shallow thrusts jarred Din's bruises. Pleasure and pain sparked together, twined up the base of Din's spine. "Sheesh," Boba murmured, nipping the offered skin at Din's throat. "Sweet," he said. Din's whole body flushed. Boba wasn't wearing anything for Din to hang on to, so Din made do with clutching at Boba's shoulders, digging his fingers into the bunched muscle there and hanging on. "How do you want it?" Boba asked, his voice vibrating against Din's neck. Din shuddered again, the sensation almost ticklish. Boba's hands kept roaming Din's flanks, his ribs. He tweaked one of Din's nipples and then leaned up to catch the groan that fell out of Din's mouth. "Like last night?" Boba pressed. He was leaning so far into Din's space, crowding him so closely up against the sonic wall that Din was on his toes. The strain in the back of Din's calves was good, like bracing himself for a flogging, a strain he would feel every time he shifted for days after. Boba seemed content to wait for Din to answer, worrying a spot of thin skin underneath Din's jaw. Din took a shallow breath. "Last night was good," he managed to say. Boba chuckled, lowly, darkly. Just good, he said, though his tone was teasing. Sounds like I need to work harder, then. You want it harder, Jerrica? Din just wanted Boba. He liked the sound of harder, though. Last night had been good, but... But I don't need Boba to be gentle. Not every time. Not if he doesn't need to be gentle. Harder's fine. Din managed to pant, his heartbeat throbbing where Boba worried another bruise into his throat. Harder's good. Boba made a deep, pleased sound and pressed closer. Hold on, then, he said. He tweaked one of Din's nipples again, hard enough that tears sprang to Din's eyes even as his cock twitched, pleasure and pain well and truly braided together, now paired inextricably in his head like a pair of suns following each other across the sky. Then Boba took his hands off Din's chest, his flanks, and set them on Din's hips instead. Din helped, kicking his pants off as Boba tugged them down. Something strained and pulled. Din thought it was maybe his pants tearing a little. But neither he nor Boba cared enough to stop and investigate. Din's cock sprang free and bobbed against his belly, hard and flushed already. Boba made another wordless sound of approval and kicked Din's pants aside. The sonic washed over them both. All right, Boba said, fingers curling hard over Din's hips. Since you asked so nicely. He fucked Din just like that against the wall of his sonic, hard and fast and good, Din's shoulders sliding higher and higher up the wall with every thrust. Last night, Boba had taken his time, had stretched Din out slowly, carefully, and filled him just as slowly, just as carefully. He had none of the same concern this morning, stretching Din quickly with two spit-slick fingers, pushing in with two quick, gut-wrenching snaps of his hips. Din made a high, thin sound, pleasure sparking hot behind his eyes, and clung tightly to Boba's shoulders. Boba set a punishing pace. The stretch of him burned. Din reached the peak of his pleasure soon, almost too soon, and tipped over the edge when Boba took a hand off Din's hip and wrapped it around Din's cock instead. Boba, Din managed to pant, the word broken and bitten off as Boba kept fucking into him, his mouth pressed against Din's collarbone. Boba, please. Boba groaned too, sounding just as destroyed as Din, and tipped over the edge of his own pleasure. His hips stuttered. Din's calves burned with the strain. Boba did stop moving, though, just breathed heavy and warm against Din's chest. The hand still on Din's hip curled. Boba's thumb brushed the trembling skin of Din's belly. Jerrica, Boba rasped. He sounded fond, sounded... Good morning to you too, Din said. That made Boba chuckle hoarsely and flick Din's hip bone. Mirsheb, Boba told Din's collarbone. He got the hint, though, and pulled out, settling Din gently back on his feet. Din swayed, buffeted by the sonic, but of course Boba didn't let him fall. Boba kept a hand on his hip and managed to get both of them properly clean, pressing little kisses to Din's jaw to the corners of Din's mouth when Din didn't protest and let Boba take care of him without a fuss. Boba used Din's pliancy to check over Din's numerous healing injuries. The gash on his arm, all of Ushib's Jurab Pace and Bacta now flicked away, the pink scar underneath Din's ribs, his many and varied bruises. Din let Boba do that too, too warm and content to put up any fight. He didn't quite sink back into that stillness in his own head, didn't sink even deeper, but Din knew that he could if he wanted to. It was safe to let his guard down around Boba. Finally, Boba switched off the sonic, and they stumbled out together, knocking their elbows and stubbing their toes again as neither of them wanted to break the contact between them. Not, Din thought, as Boba stopped by the sink to turn the water on to rinse out his mouth, a hand still skimming Din's hip across his belly, the swell of his ass. The worst way to spend the morning. He let Boba work a little bit of water into Din's hair and his beard, then drank from the tap while Boba made some space between them. Boba finally let go of Din's hip to tug on a pair of pants. Din shivered at the loss of contact, tried not to sway too obviously in Boba's direction, and cast around for his own pants, then frowned. In his haste to get at Din, Boba had actually ripped the pants Din had been wearing. Din held up the torn fabric and eyed Boba, who grimaced. "Sorry," said Boba. He didn't sound sorry at all. Not too attached to that particular pair, were you? Din rolled his eyes. No, he said, but they were the only pair I had up here. He knew that only three people, Boba, Fennec, and Din himself, had access to the lift up into Boba's rooms, but that didn't mean that Din wanted to climb into it without any carking pants on. Fennec has the lift code too, Din thought, blood running cold. If I ran into her like this... Ripped the shirt too, looks like, Boba continued. He sounded pleased this time. Din rolled his eyes again, harder. Boba had ripped the shirt, too, now that Din looked at it. Not quite as badly as the pants, but still. I also only had this shirt up here, Din said. He looked at himself in the mirror above Boba's sink. He looked a little like he'd been attacked by a wild animal. Hair mussed, red bite bruises forming on his neck, shirt torn at the collar. We can find you something, said Boba, entirely unrepentant. He was looking at Din with an expression in his eyes that made a pang of lust bolt through Din's belly. The depth of the feeling surprised him. I didn't know it was possible to want someone this much, he thought. Din had just had Boba inside him, on him. The fresher still smelled faintly of sweat and sex. But if Boba asked, Din would take him again. He would. He felt like every cell in his body was bent towards Boba. Come here, Boba said. He held a hand out. Din took it. They left the fresher together, both wincing at the bright light of true day, and Boba started to look around for a spare set of clothes. Din tugged his ripped shirt off and left it on the fresher floor with his torn pants. I have never, he thought again, had this problem before. Here, this one's clean, said Boba, tossing a black fabric shirt at Din's head. Din caught it and tugged it on. It was long enough to fall to the tops of his thighs, made in the usual Tatooine style, loose and flowing, but Din still wanted pants. He said as much, and Boba laughed at him. Hold on, Boba said. I'll find you something. Where's your kuta? What? Din asked, turning around. Boba looked at him, one scarred eyebrow raised. Your kuta? Boba repeated. Your flight suit? I know what a kuta is, Boba, Din said. What do you mean, where is it? It's... Din stopped. His kuta was two floors down, thrown across the bed he hadn't slept in. So was Din's armor. Din had gone past them earlier this morning when he'd hopped into the Sonic for the first time and left to find something to eat. He'd left his kuta behind, his armor. I walked through the palace without my armor on. Din stared at Boba, shocked. Any residual pleasure, any comfort, the happy calm he'd borrowed from Boba and wrapped around himself when he'd gone down to raid the kitchens, vanished entirely. My kuta, Din heard himself say, his voice roaring in his ears like the wind, is in my room, with my armor. Boba frowned. What? Din raised a hand and pressed his fingers to his cheek. His skin was cool, but not as cool as Beskar. The ridge of his cheek wasn't as straight as the helmet's unforgiving planes. Boba's frown deepened. What? He repeated, abandoning his search, coming back over to Din. What's wrong? Din swallowed. It's not wrong, he made himself say. Nothing's wrong, but I didn't realize that I hadn't put my armor on. I didn't even think about putting it on. Din had had the chance. He'd gone back to his own room to hop in the Sonic because he hadn't wanted to wake Boba by using his. Din had had the chance to tug his kuta on, to snap his armor into place over it. But I didn't even think about it. He'd climbed out of the Sonic, he'd gotten dressed, and then he had just walked through the palace, gone to Siushib, walked back, all without his armor on, his helmet, without even noticing that he didn't have it on. The only place Din had ever been comfortable enough to leave his armor off had been the Razor Crest, before Din had found Grogu. He'd taken his armor off to sleep in hyperspace or to fly alone between the stars. He'd never gone without it when he'd had another being on board. Not even when he'd had a bounty or six frozen in carbonite. only when he'd been truly alone. That he'd done it here without even realizing was... Hey, Boba said, reaching out. Din let him, unsure of what else he could, or even should, do. I am Darmanda. I shouldn't wear my armor at all anymore, but... Hey, Boba repeated, quietly. He caught Din by the wrist again, gentle, and held on. His touch grounded Din, even though Din didn't want it to. It's all right. Din curled his lip. I know it's all right, close to spitting the words out. It's the way it's supposed to be. Boba frowned. Because you're Darmanda. Din nodded. Hmm, said Boba. The sound was considering. Din supposed that he should be grateful for it. Boba had always made his feelings on Din's creed very clear. He thinks that it's wrong. The thought caught underneath Din's skin, snagged like a thorn. But wrong or not, the creed had rules. And one of them was that a warrior should wear his armor. You said you didn't think about putting your armor on, Boba pressed. He'd fit his thumb and forefinger together over Din's wrist, over his pulse. He could probably feel how hard Din's heart was kicking. Din shook his head. Why, what were you thinking about instead? That made Din draw up a little, blinking. I wasn't thinking, Din said. I was... He shook his head. He'd been in that hyperspace-like state. Calm and content, soaring through the stars. Boba's expression cleared a little, even though Din hadn't said anything at all. You were still under, Boba said. That made Din look at him, made him unwillingly meet Boba's eyes. Under? He asked. He didn't understand. Boba had said that before, after a flogging, usually, when he gentled Din after, made his nonsense noises, traced his nonsense patterns into Din's skin. He'd asked that a few times. Still under? Yeah, you know. Boba used his free hand to reach out and tap Din between the eyes, over the ridge of his old scar. In your head. Still under. It happens, Boba explained. It happens. I've heard that it makes you feel like you're underwater. It happens to beings like me, he's saying, Din realized. That was what Boba was getting at. It happened to beings like Din, who gave up control to someone else, who liked to be hurt, who drew something, focus or strength or purpose, something from pain. Din swallowed again. Did it feel like that? Boba pressed, though his tone was still gentle. Like being underwater. Din shook his head. No, he said. It was like... It wasn't even like it usually is, he tried to explain. Boba's frown deepened. What's it usually like? Din didn't want to answer. It was hard to describe, and moreover, it was private. It was Din's. The way he felt after he'd been flogged and the way he felt after he'd been fucked. But Boba was just watching, expression concerned, Din thought. He was concerned. I don't want to worry him, Din thought. Flying, Din said, honestly. Like using a jetpack. Everything's weightless, I guess, like you've turned off gravity. And that's not how you felt this morning. Din shook his head again. No, it... I almost didn't notice it, he admitted. I just thought that I was relaxed. It was like... Like being asleep, or mostly asleep, in hyperspace. Boba cocked his head a little. Din grimaced. He wasn't good at this. He didn't have the right words. I felt... Hyperspace is safe, Din tried again. It's the only place I ever am safe, usually. Even in the covert, we knew that we could be attacked at any time, but hyperspace, no one can get to you in hyperspace. Din had been as safe as he could be. There had always been the risk that his ship would explode, he supposed, but he'd at least been safe from enemies. Din had always used his time at Lightspeed to rest, to fix up his armor, to clean his kit, to make repairs on the crest, or to make Tingilar for Grogu. Boba's expression cleared, which made Din sag a little in relief. He understands. And you felt safe here, Boba said quietly, when you woke up this morning. Din shrugged with one shoulder. Hearing Boba say it out loud like that made it sound stupid, trite, like a mistake. I know we're not totally safe here, Din said. He didn't pull his wrist out of Boba's gentle grip, but he did use his other hand to rub his forehead. I know that. We could. Gorga could come back at any time. I just felt, I don't know, peaceful. Safe. Din had woken up in Boba's arms and had felt safe. He swallowed again, a knot catching in his throat. Boba's expression was terribly open and terribly gentle. Din couldn't stand to look at it. Hey, said Boba for the third time that morning, tightening his grip just a little. Din could feel Boba's heartbeat echoing against Din's own, Boba's fingertips pressed to Din's wrist. It's all right, Boba said. Whatever your creed says, Jerrica, it's... I'm honored. Din looked at Boba then. He didn't understand. By your trust, Boba continued. He sounded so sincere that it made Din's skin itch, made his shoulders pull tight. That you felt that you trust me that much. I don't... What we do, Boba said, gesturing between himself and Din with his free hand, doesn't take me out of my head the same way it does for you. It doesn't? Boba shook his head. It's different on the other end of the flogger, he said. For me, it's, I don't know, hard to describe. It's not about finding peace, it's about clarity, focus. That didn't sound too much different from what Din found under Boba's guidance, under Boba's control, but he nodded anyway, trying to understand. I am glad that he gets something out of this, Din thought. He was glad that he wasn't the only one who benefited from their odd little arrangement, that it gave Boba something too, even if Boba wanted something different out of the arrangement. I'm not supposed to put the armor on at all, Din said. It shouldn't... He stopped again. It shouldn't upset me, finding out that I had left your rooms without thinking about putting my armor on at all. It's different, Boba said. Right? Din nodded, miserable. It was different. Din still needed his armor, not to be a Mandalorian, but to do his duty, to help him keep his word. You've put your armor on every morning since you were a child, Boba guessed. Din nodded again. He'd put it on every day, and that was if he'd ever taken it off at all. Din had slept in his armor more often than not. Boba made a rough sound. Nisavari, he said. I understand. Do you? Din muttered, looking away again. He was hurt somewhere deep in his chest and not quite sure why. Boba just raised a tired eyebrow. Guilt pricked at Din again. Boba had been well rested for once. My armor, Boba said, his tone deliberately flat and even, was taken from me for years. Din froze. I forgot, he thought a little guiltily. He'd forgotten that Boba had lost his armor after he'd fallen into the Sarlacc pit. I kept looking for it, Ushu tells me, Boba said. His grip on Din's wrist had tightened incrementally. Din let it. Boba's eyes were farther away than usual, his normally sharp present gaze distant. She said I'd wake up in the depth of fever, asking her where my armor was. I had to learn to use a Gaderfi without its weight. So, yes, Jerrica, I understand. Din winced at the bite in Boba's tone. Just because he's not Darmanda doesn't mean that he doesn't understand what this feels like, Din thought. Boba had been orphaned. He'd lost his father, his family, his history. That was what Beskar Gam was, wasn't it? It was a record of the past. Din didn't know anything about where most of his Beskar had come from, but the Imperials had collected it during the Purge. It had belonged to someone once, to a Mandalorian. And Din had carried that with him every time he'd strapped his cuirass on. He'd carried that dead Mandalorian's history and his own history, too. The Mudhorn he'd killed with Grogu's help, Palos Vizsla's kindness when he donated some of his own armor to sponsor the Foundlings. And I just forgot about it all, Din thought. The knot in his throat grew thorns and caught there, aching. It's not a bad thing, Din, Boba said quietly. Din looked up at the ceiling instead of at Boba's face. He didn't know yet what he was feeling. It was all caught up together in his chest. Grief and loss and shame, yes, but relief, too. Din had forgotten to put his armor on, but he'd still been himself. He hadn't needed his armor. That frightened him. It's not a bad thing, Boba repeated. It's just Ivarla. New, Din said. He knew that word. Boba nodded. New, he agreed. And I meant it. I am honored by your trust. It's good that you feel safe here. It's good. I've never kept you around because of your armor, you know. Din managed a thin smile at that. His thoughts were still churning. I know, he said. Wear it, don't wear it, it doesn't matter to me, said Boba, his tone firm. And if it matters to anyone else, you send it my way, Jaren. Or Fennex. We'll set it right. I can fight my own battles, you know, Din said, trying to pull himself together. He'd been surprised, that was all. Din had never handled surprises very well. That easy piece had long since vanished, but that doesn't mean I need to be unhappy, Din told himself. He needed... Well, Din didn't know what he needed exactly, except that he didn't have time to set up here panicking about something that had already happened. Din had gone out without his armor on. He'd shown his face to half of Tatooine by now. There was nothing he could do to change it, and sitting up here tormenting himself meant that nothing would get done. I can worry about it later, Din told himself. He took a steadying breath, tried to get his heart back under control where it thumped irregularly against Boba's fingertips. Boba's eyes crinkled up a little at the corners. I know, he said, but you don't have to. Tratalit Garbez Petresh. Me and Fennec were in your corner. It's all right to need help every once in a while, yeah? Din did meet Boba's eyes then, raising an eyebrow in disbelief. He knew what Boba was doing. Boba was trying to get Din's mind off the creed, what it meant or didn't mean. It worked a little, because what Boba said was ridiculous coming from Boba. Boba chuckled. He ran his thumb over Din's pulse point, soothing. Don't look at me like that, Mishev, he said. I can ask for help just fine. That's why you're here, isn't it? I'm here, Din muttered, though his resolve was crumbling and he was letting Boba pull him along into a better mood, like he always did. Because you've got a planet's ransom in Beskar and you're trying to get rid of it. Been succeeding, too, Boba said, or at least I was until that honor of yours got in the way. Din shrugged with one shoulder, uncomfortable, but Boba didn't seem interested in letting Din retreat. Jerrica, Boba said, serious again. I meant what I said. Wear your armor or don't wear your armor, I don't care. I'll have you either way. He had said something like that before, that he had never cared whether or not Din was Mandalorian, and he meant it. Boba had promised to be honest, which meant that he was being honest now. For some reason, the way Boba was looking at Din made Din's ears redden, made Din's heart kick helplessly in his chest. He's telling the truth, Din thought. He does- He doesn't care. Din didn't know what to do with that, so he just nodded, dazed, and let Boba tug him gently back over to the work table, where Boba installed him in front of his now very cold breakfast. "Did it get easier for you?" Din finally asked after a moment, watching Boba take his own seat across the table. Boba looked at him. Not having your armor, I mean, Din said, with the spotted Anuba. Did you get used to it? Boba studied Din for a moment, and then he sighed. No, he said. I didn't. Din dipped his head and tucked wordlessly back into his Yazda cot. He and Boba finished their breakfast in prickly quiet. It wasn't prickly on Boba's end, Din didn't think. Boba kept casting Din concerned little glances, his brows drawn together in thought, but it was Din who was prickly, defensive. On the back foot again, Din thought sourly. He almost wished that Boba hadn't said anything. Din would have figured out that he'd left his armor behind eventually, but he could have figured it out alone, somewhere where Boba couldn't see him, couldn't read his face. Guilt gnawed at Din's ribs. Things had been so easy between him and Boba these last few weeks. They'd had their arguments, their talks and negotiations, and had found something easy and peaceful and genuine between them. That ease had burned up with the suns. Din couldn't find his way back to his little hyperlane of peace now if he tried. His head was full of noise. Din drained the last of his now bitter tea with a grimace, then looked past Boba into the morning desert beyond the palace. The sky was bright and blue and cloudless. Heat had fallen over the sands like an armored fist. "Din," Boba began, his eyes still dark with concern, but Din shook his head. "It's fine," Din said. "I don't want to talk about it." Something flickered across Boba's face, but he nodded. "We can drop it then," he said. His eyes were thoughtful. A muscle jumped in Din's jaw, but he bit back the urge to bridle like a territorial tack. This isn't Boba's fault, Din thought to himself. Boba had been trying to help Din. He had helped. He had always helped, even if it was still hard for Din to let Boba help. This is my fault. I'm the one who keeps getting tangled up in all of this. Din was Darmanda. It shouldn't matter anymore what he did or didn't do. But it does. Din swallowed that bit of bitterness, too. He wished that he'd told Boba that he was Darmanda from the moment he'd stepped into the palace. If Din had just gotten it all out of the way, then maybe I wouldn't keep tripping over it, he thought. He shook his head irritably, trying to clear that away. It was too late for that. Focus, man. Focus, Din, he told himself. If he couldn't find that peaceful place inside of himself, Din could at least find the cool professional calm of a bounty hunter. He could still work and maybe lose himself in the work a little. There was still plenty to be done. I'm going back to Mos Eisley today, Din told Boba, to keep looking for Gorga's accomplice. Are you going to hold court? Boba's expression was still shadowed, thoughtful, but he held true to his word and didn't push Din about forgetting his armor again. Boba rubbed a hand over his chin, stubble rasping, and nodded. This evening, yeah, Boba said. That Rodian you stunned during the raid, I'm going to pay him another visit this morning. He wasn't feeling particularly talkative yesterday, but that was before he'd spent the night with a couple of hungry womp rats. He hasn't had anything to eat since the raid, and neither have they. Should be a little more willing to talk to me today, I think. Once I've paid him a visit, yeah, I was going to open the court back up. Fennekel want to get information flowing through the palace again, and I want to show the city that we're still here. That business is going on as usual, Din thought. He nodded. He understood that. I would prefer it if you at least took your bask into Mos Eisley, Boba admitted. He grimaced. Not gonna make you, but... No, Din said, thinking of the eyes on him the last time he'd gone into town. The stairs, the weak way in his garrote, the wire biting into Din's kuta. I'll take it into the city. Today, at least, he thought. Boba had given Din an idea. Everyone in Mos Eisley, most of the planet, honestly, knew who Din was. The Mandalorian in Silver Beskar was Boba Fett's left hand, his favorite Ak-Dog. But Din Djarin? No one, not many people, know what I really look like, Din thought. More beings now knew who he was, what he looked like under his Beskar, than ever before, but most of them were firmly entrenched in Boba's outfit, or were several star systems away. He'd thought about that before. If Din went into Mos Eisley in his armor, everyone knew who he was and who he worked for and what his business was about. A Hutt spy would see Din coming from miles away. Din had already tried to play the Baraya. He hadn't found anything except Geeta's help. But me? Din himself, without his Beskar Gam, was just a man. Tatooine was full of men. Without his helmet on, Din could pass himself off as anyone. A moisture farmer in from the sands, a smuggler looking for a place to lie low, a spacer, a slaver, anything. That thought frightened him, too, going into Mos Eisley exposed, unarmored, bare for everyone to see. But it might work, he thought, under the fear. As long as Din didn't draw too much attention to himself, and he shouldn't without his armor, he could blend in anywhere on Tatooine. Din's heartbeat picked up again. Boba watched Din with those keen, dark eyes, probably seeing more, as always, than Din wanted him to see. But he didn't push, and he didn't call Din out on the idea he'd just had. It might work, Din thought again. He'd have to talk to Geeta. He didn't want to go into Mos Eisley unarmored and blind. But this... this is something that I can do to help, Din thought. Djarin, Boba said, tone serious. Whatever you're thinking about, whatever you're feeling, just be careful, all right? Din pushed his plate aside and stood. The breeze looked at him. He really did need to find a pair of pants. His pulse hammered against the backs of his teeth. I will be, he promised. Nigatile, Boba muttered. You better mean that, Jerrica. Din kept his word over the course of the next week. He made himself repair his kuta, put his armor on, and for the next several days, Din presented himself to Tatooine as Tatooine expected to see him. The Mandalorian, always at Boba's side or out on Boba's business, Silver Beskar shining in the suns. Din's next few trips to Mos Eisley proved just as fruitless as his first had been right after Gorga's raid. Din was careful not to spend too much time in the quarter so that his presence didn't make trouble for the Ahra, for Geeta and Ruli and the others who lived there. But when he took Geeta home after a shift behind the bar one night, she helped him arrange a meeting place inside the Gleaning where she could meet up with Din again and introduce him to Ruli's cousins, both of whom had agreed to help Din and Geeta look for Gorga's spy. Ruli had more cousins than Tatooine had grains of sand, Geeta had explained. Geeta's mother had been brought to Tatooine as a girl, so Geeta didn't have much family on planet, but Ruli's clan had been in Mos Eisley for generations. The two who'd agreed to help, Siolo and Yuna, seemed dependable enough. Geeta said that more of Ruli's cousins had volunteered, but Geeta hadn't wanted to turn them all loose in Mos Eisley. Slaves were everywhere, but a whole brace of them showing up sniffing around cantina doors and smugglers' dens was a good way to tip any Hutt sympathizers off. Siolo was a big, blue-skinned Twi'lek with the same starburst tattoos tracing down his leku that Ruli had, and he was as tough as a desert weed. He'd bought his freedom a few years back and made most of his clink running deliveries around Mos Eisley and occasionally looming in the doorways of the Gleaning's numerous clubs and cantinas. Din couldn't help but like Siolo a little. Siolo was quiet, but he had a sharp intelligence behind his eyes that Din liked. Siolo had agreed to ask around among his friends at the cantinas and clubs he worked for, keeping an ear out for anyone who might be bragging about working for the Hutts. None of us, he'd said gravely when Din had asked Siolo why he was willing to help. Like Hutts. His sister Ula was a dancer for Jabba, Geeta had explained dispassionately when Din had asked her if Siolo could be trusted. Until she got tired of dancing one day and ended up in Patissa's cage. Ruli's other cousin, Yuna, made Din a little more nervous. It wasn't that he wasn't dependable. He was younger and smaller and thinner than Siolo, his skin red instead of blue, untattooed and more talkative than Siolo. It's that he's young, Din thought when Geeta introduced him. Siolo was young too, but had lived hard. It made him careful. Yuna wasn't quite as careful. He also wasn't quite as able to eavesdrop on potential huts, though, which made Din feel better about using Yuna to gather information. Yuna didn't have the build to get work as a bouncer, but he was quick on his feet and handy with a spanner, so he'd found work as a delivery driver and a mechanic, carting bottles of freshly brewed Tatooine Junko around the city. He'd even been to the palace a few times. Nora, herself apparently a distant cousin of Ruli's, used Yuna for her deliveries. "Huts are bad for business," Yuna had said cheerfully when Din had asked him the same question he'd asked Siolo. "Well, for my business. Under Fortuna, I had to pay protection money every week. Lord Fett doesn't charge me any protection tax at all, and if anybody messes with me, I can report them to him, and he'll take care of it." Din had been pleased to hear that Boba's policies, lax by most syndicate standards, had won him the goodwill of at least a few of Mos Eisley's people, and had said as much to Boba at court later that night. Yuna's cheerful loyalty had put Boba in such a good mood that he hadn't even shot a smuggler who'd been caught skimming more than his fair share off the top of his shipments than he should have been. Instead of killing the smuggler like he'd killed Cheem and Chud, Boba had just had one of the palace guards lop off one of the smuggler's four hands with a vibropike and sent the smuggler on his way. Court had resumed without too much trouble. The first few days Boba held it, the crowds were thin and nervous, only the bravest or most desperate coming to Boba for help or to cut a deal. But by the end of the week, Boba's throne room was just as packed as it had ever been, and business had more or less gotten back on track. Din himself was still off balance, restless. He was busy, though, which helped. Running a criminal empire, he learned, was hard. There were 100 things to think about at any given time. "And I'm not even doing this alone," Din thought one night, watching protectively over the evening court as it wound down towards its close. He still guarded the stairs half the time, usually in the evenings. The rest of Din's time was split between either taking Geeta home at night, on the nights that she worked. Nora, half convinced that her friends and co-workers would be killed if the palace was attacked again, was only giving up the bar a few times a week, and working with Geeta's friends. Din didn't have to worry about managing guard rotations or taking reports in from Fennec spies, didn't have to worry about whether or not the hyperspace runs Boba had chosen were still secret or if Bestine was still a usable port. "I just have to hunt," Din thought. But even that was proving more difficult than usual. Siolo and Yuna had turned up a few leads. Siolo'd overheard a Rodian at a cantina in the Gleaning mutter about wanting a hut present back on Tatooine. Yuna had found a tunnel under Mos Eisley that was still marked as a hut hideout. Din had checked in on the Rodian, and he'd gone under the city into the tunnels, but neither had turned up anything that he could use. The Rodian wanted the huts back because he'd been a slaver, and slaving under Jabba, or even under Bib Fortuna, had been reliable, easy clink. The tunnels had been used before. Din had found a few crates of expired glitter stim and one body that had decayed down to nothing but womp-chewed bones, but they hadn't been used recently. Din had put up a motion trigger in the tunnel anyway, just to make sure he'd know if someone did use it, and he'd turned the Rodian slaver over to a Wookiee family the Rodian had once bought and sold, and then he'd sent Siolo and Yuna back out to search again, but the lack of progress was starting to chafe. "I'm not a spy," he thought unhappily, pushing his back against the wall. "This isn't the kind of hunting I'm good at." Fennec, back on her feet now and once again in charge of Boba's guards and his spies, wasn't having any luck either. She'd said as much of her first meal that morning. She'd even gone down to the dungeons with Boba a few times to try and get their captive Merc to talk, but when he had cracked, he hadn't known anything useful. Just that there was somebody in Mos Eisley who'd been in charge of dropping speeders off in the Jundland Wastes, and that Gorga had at least 10 more Mercs on his payroll. "We're missing something," Din thought. If he and Fennec were both hunting in their own ways and were both still coming back every day empty-handed, it meant that they had to be missing something. Din just didn't know what it was. It itched at him, prickled, was a feeling he worried at like a sore tooth. That frustration made Din short-tempered and withdrawn. Everyone noticed. Fennec, Nora, Strill and Shag, the 2 times he'd seen the Verdike since the raid. Even Boba. Especially Boba, Din thought. Boba had been watching Din all week. He'd been watching Din quietly, contemplatively, with none of the usual heat or expectation. Din still caught Boba studying him all the time, but not studying Din like he was worried about Din. And not like he wanted to eat Din alive. They were still spending almost every night together. They'd even bump Beskar a few more times, fast and slow and a few more paces in between. Din was getting used to waking up with one of Boba's arms thrown proprietorially over his chest, one of Boba's legs slotted between his own. It was becoming familiar. That was itching at Din, too. The familiarity. Yaimla, Boba had called it. Like home. Should it feel like home? Din couldn't help but wonder. He tried not to think about this sort of thing when he was on the job, but court this evening had been slow. Boba'd resolved most of his petitioner's problems early on in the night and was now embroiled in what looked like a very boring discussion about a fuel tax with a bristling whiffet and wiry human woman. Fennec had started collecting blasters at the doors, so neither were armed. Should I be as comfortable here as I am? Din hadn't gone around without his armor on since the first time. It was too dangerous. But he'd thought about it. Every morning, when he'd levered himself out of Boba's bed, Din thought about it. Thought about pulling on a shirt and pants like a spacer, or Katarn like one of Fennec's guards, leaving his Beskar behind. He hadn't been able to do it, not yet. Doing it accidentally was one thing, but doing it intentionally. Din and Boba hadn't done anything together that would put Din back into that state of ease, so forgetting his armor accidentally was out of the question. Maybe that's why I'm so unsettled, Din thought. For the first time in what felt like weeks, Din didn't have any bruises. He was healed, whole. Or at least as whole as he ever was these days. Even his more serious wounds, the gash Paz had left in his upper arm, the wound Din had taken defending the throne room, were scarred over. The last of his bruises had faded days ago, and Boba hadn't given Din any new ones. That was part of the problem, too, Din thought. That Boba was handling Din so... not gently, exactly, because Din had made his feelings about being coddled very clear, but so... deliberately, Din thought. Every time Boba touched Din these days, he did it with intent. Not intent to hurt Din, no matter how much Din wanted a few bruises to help him narrow his focus, but intent to... well, I'm not sure what he intends, Din thought. He felt Boba's eyes on him again and looked back, his helmet impassive, even as he scowled into his visor. I don't know what Boba wants. Something had changed when Din had told Boba that he'd forgotten to put his armor on. He didn't know what had changed, but it had, for Boba at least. That was why Boba spent so much time looking at Din thoughtfully these days, like Din was a puzzle he was trying to solve. Why his every touch was so careful. It didn't help that Boba's own temper had grown shorter as the week had gone by either. Din's search in Mos Eisley didn't turn up anything, and neither did Fennec's spies or the Tuscans watching the desert. The frustration was gnawing away at Boba, too. Boba's tolerance for greedy smugglers and haggling shopkeepers grew thinner and thinner each time Din or Fennec or one of the Tuscans reported in empty-handed. The entire palace was on edge. Everyone put on a good show, played normal so that none of Gorga's spies would be able to tell the worm that he'd rattled Boba Fett and his crew. But were angry, Din thought. He didn't have any trouble lumping himself in with the rest of Boba's outfit. He was angry, they all were. Nura and Fennec and Din and the guards, Kasik and Theron. What was left of A2, Boba. Were angry. Gorga had attacked them over a week ago, and so far they were no closer to finding out how, finding out who'd helped him carry out the attack, than they were when they'd been rubbing smoke out of their noses and blood out of their eyes. We're angry, and some of us are afraid. Din had grown up expecting his home to be raided without much warning. He was used to living this way, to checking doors and windows whenever he walked into a room, scanning every crowd for unfamiliar faces, for drawn blasters, for knives. But not everyone grew up like I did. Fennec and Boba both handled the increased stress, the building anticipation that Gorga was going to kick their front door in, well enough. Others were fraying under the pressure. Geeta had been given the bar tonight because Nora had been very firmly sent home by Fennec. Boba had sent Kasik to Mos Pelgo on a scouting mission because Kasik had torn the arm off a petitioner who'd gotten a little too close to Boba for Kasik's comfort. If I'm being honest, Din thought, letting his eyes drift over the throne room, determinedly not looking at Boba. We're all starting to feel the pressure. Boba's patience was thinner than ever. Fennec was, as far as Din could tell, taking a fistful of calf pills every hour instead of sleeping, and Din himself was fraying too, Din thought. He could admit that to himself. His skin and his armor were starting to feel too tight if he was alone with his thoughts for too long. He was restless. He'd found himself pacing around the room instead of leaning up against the wall a few times, swinging his head from side to side like an Anuba trying to pick up a scent. I'm not sleeping much either. When Din did sleep, even if it was in Boba's bed, his arms, Din had strange dreams. Din wouldn't call them nightmares exactly, as he never remembered them when he woke up, but he knew he had had them. Boba was having dreams, too. He'd twitch and kick in his sleep, growl, mutter in Mandoa. None of what he said ever made any sense to Din, but it happened almost every night. It was wearing on them both, the restlessness, the dreams. We need to find Gorga's accomplice, Din thought. They needed to find out what Gorga wanted. All of this waiting for something to happen, was pumping pressure into the whole palace. Maybe that's what Gorga wants, Din thought darkly. For all of us to be on edge, at each other's throats. Din certainly felt like he'd like to punch Boba every time he caught Boba looking at him with that sad, contemplative tilt to his head. While Din watched, Boba's head came up from the little huddle he'd made with the human woman and the Wyfid, and his visor turned towards Din again. Din scowled harder and abandoned his post, turning his face away. I don't need to be watched, Din thought. I'm not... Well, Din hardly knew what he was or wasn't anymore. He was Darmanda, but he didn't feel Darmanda, not really. I am not a Wurruk. He kept coming back to that. Paz had said it, Strill had said it. Din wasn't anything that someone who had become Darmanda was supposed to be. He wasn't cruel, he wasn't mad, he wasn't soulless. But I'm not Mandalorian anymore, either. Din couldn't be Mandalorian anymore. He had broken the creed. By that law, he was... nothing. No one. Worse, Din thought, padding over to the bar, where Geeta flashed him a tired smile. She had warmed up to Din considerably over the last few days, and was now almost as friendly towards him as Nora was, and poured him a small measure of Tihar without needing to take Din's order. She even put a straw in it, which Din appreciated. Worse, Din thought again, taking a sip of Tihar. As always, it burned a little going down, made his eyes water behind his helmet. Worse, I think. I think that maybe... maybe the creed was wrong in the first place. It didn't make sense. Din wasn't stupid, and he wasn't a coward. He didn't want to think about this, but he couldn't hide from it anymore, either. He'd been holding all of the pieces for weeks now. The scraps he'd scraped together from what he'd heard from Boba, from Kreese, from Fennec. What he'd learned about Death Watch and the true Mandalorians, the wars, the infighting, the feuds, the fall of Mandalore. My Alor kept the truth from me, Din thought. It was cold and stark and unyielding. But it was true. The Armorer had known some of Mandalore's history, at least. She'd told it to Annika, who'd told it to Paz. And if she knew it, that meant that she deliberately kept it from us. That the Armorer had, for some reason, decided that the foundlings of her tribe didn't need to learn about their own history, about other Mandalorians, other creeds, other ways. That's not right. It took faith to follow the creed. Conviction, strength. Din had thought for most of his life that he'd been strong enough to follow the creed. He'd done his best to follow it. denied himself comfort and pleasure and clan. And I didn't need to do that. There were other ways of the Mandalore. As many ways as there had been clans on Mandalore, Boba had said. And if that was true, then the way I lived my life was wrong. Guilt flickered in Din's belly, but it was dimmer now than it had been before when he'd first come into the palace, and it was getting dimmer every day. In its place, Din was angry. Angry that he'd been lied to, that the Allod had kept all this from him, from Paz and the rest of the foundlings Din had grown up with. And angry that any of it mattered at all. According to the creed, none of it should matter. All that mattered were the words Din had sworn and the words that he'd broken. The rest of it was just noise. Din closed his eyes and resisted the urge to push his helmet back into his face. I need something, Din thought. He needed to focus. Worrying about whether he was or wasn't Mandalorian, if he'd ever been Mandalorian in the first place, wasn't going to help him find Gorga's spy. It wasn't going to help him protect Boba, which was just about all Din had to live for these days. Din grimaced. No, he said to himself, that's not true. Din had Kreese's quest, which he still hadn't told Boba about. Din had Grogu. He had Paz and the Verdike to see the safety. That was plenty. It wasn't the tribe, the covert that Din had fed for 15 years, but it wasn't nothing. Maybe, Din thought, gulping down his glass of Tihar and wincing at the taste. I can convince Boba to flog me tonight. Maybe he could get Boba riled up enough and convince Boba to take his frustration out on Din. That sounded like a win for everyone. Boba would get to burn off some of his mounting frustration, and Din would get new bruises to help him focus. Need another? Geeta asked, drifting past Din on her way from one end of the bar to the other. Din was tempted to nod, but he didn't. No, he muttered, gruff. I'm fine. When are you done tonight? Geeta checked a chrono on the wall. Half an hour? She said. Boba had enacted a curfew after the attack. He closed the palace down just before midnight Tatooine time and sent all of his guests back to their homes or their camps in the desert. No one had argued against it, at least not yet. Din hated the thought of spending another half hour pacing around the throne room, feeling like a trapped animal with the walls of its cage pressing in closer, but there was nothing Din could do to speed up the chrono. So he just nodded, wrapped the bar, and let Geeta get back to work. He did his best to put all of his thoughts out of his head, too. He repeated that old familiar mantra to himself. Focus, Mandalorian. It wasn't true. It wasn't true, but it still helped, so Din leaned into it and ignored the voice in his head that sounded like his Allod, telling him he couldn't call himself a warrior of the tribe, and tried to focus on work. Din made a slow circuit of the throne room, counting down from 50 in hot ease. He reached again for the Baroya. If Din was nothing else, he was still a hunter. Not all bounty hunters are Mandalorian, he reminded himself. Din had been a hunter for years. He could still be a hunter, even if he did eventually work up the nerve to get rid of his Beskar entirely. I am still a hunter. That's what Boba needs right now, a hunter to track down his enemies. Repeating that a few times helped settle Din some, helped him slide again into that professional calm of the Baroya that Din had lived in for so many years. Distant and watchful and cool. He made another circuit of the throne room, feeling steadier. Boba had wrapped up negotiations with the human and the Wifid and had returned to his throne, where he sprawled with one leg cocked off the edge. The band was playing in their usual corner. Geeta worked the bar with confidence. Fennec propped herself up against Boba's right side, keeping him safe. Finally, the throne room began to empty out. The band stopped playing. Din made his way back over to Geeta, who closed the bar up and was ready to leave in just a few minutes, locking up the Tihar cabinet and raising an eyebrow at Din expectantly. That did make him smile a little. Geeta's trust was not easily won. That she smiled at Din now, after so many weeks of scowling at him or pretending he didn't exist, felt like a little victory. Din was learning a lot about the denizens of Mos Eisley through Geeta, the people of the Quarter specifically. Cobb Vanth had told Din once that his Babs, his eyes and ears across Tatooine, were like Kirik flies, always buzzing around Tatooine but hardly ever noticed, and numbering in the thousands, the hundreds of thousands. Tatooine was a slaving planet for a long time, Din reflected, falling in at his usual spot just off Geeta's hip as they made their way through the throne room together. Din lifted a hand at Boba and Fennec so that they'd know where he was going. Boba didn't react, but Fennec tilted her chin back. It's still a slaving planet, honestly. Boba had outlawed slavery in his immediate sphere of influence, but that didn't mean that it had vanished overnight. Geeta was free, Nora was free, Cobb Vanth, Pyrrha Windrunner, Kirsha Littlemoon, and a dozen more guards in Mos Pelgo. But not everyone on planets got the hint. Din hadn't understood that, not really, until Geeta had explained it to him, and now that she had, and now that she saw that Din understood, she'd warmed up to Din considerably. She hadn't gone as far as calling him Manera like Nora did, but she called him Batran more often than not. More and more beings in the Quarter were coming to trust Din, too. It wasn't all Twi'leks, though Mos Pelgo's Twi'lek community had figured out that Din spoke Ryl and had been delighted. There were plenty of humans, almost all of them with Cobb Vanth's Fornskir eyes, and plenty of other species, too. Rodians and Wookiees and Deveronians. A few tough, leathery-faced Ugnaughts who reminded Din of Queel. Din was doing his best to honor that trust. He hadn't gotten desperate enough yet to ask anyone else in Mos Eisley to spy for him, but it was good, he supposed, to know that if he asked, some of his new acquaintances in the Quarter might step in to help. Something to think about, anyway, Din thought. He'd been on long jobs before. A week was... It was frustrating, but it was only a week. He didn't need to put anyone else in danger, not yet. Din and Geeta went against the flow of the throne room's general traffic, leaving by a side door instead of the stairway up the sand road. Gorga's attack on the palace had made Fennec even more paranoid than usual. She was making all of the palace staff leave the palace through the tunnels instead of the main doors. Din didn't mind exactly, since it kept him and Geeta from getting bombed on the side of the sand road again. Once they'd made it into the tunnels and were more or less alone, Geeta turned her head back to look at Din. Her skin shone a darker color in the dim tunnel lights, almost red instead of her usual orange. "Any luck under Mos Eisley?" she asked. "Yuna told me." Din shook his head. "No," he said. "Set up some motion sensors just in case, but it doesn't look like the tunnels have been used in a while. You got anything?" Geeta hadn't been to the palace for a few days. Din hoped she'd use some of that time to look carefully around Mos Eisley. She smiled at him again, showing him a flash of her sharp teeth. "Actually, yeah," she said. Din straightened. "Siolo found a place," she continued. "He thinks it's a hut front, a cantina." Din frowned, even as his instincts lifted. "Boba and Fennec said that they cleared out most of the hut-run cantinas," he said. "They went through the gleaning weeks ago." They'd driven most openly hut-affiliated businesses out of town after Boba had taken Bubiska. "That's the thing," said Geeta. "It's not in the gleaning." Din cocked his head. "Where is it, then, the Quarter?" Geeta shook her head. "It's in the business district," she said, "which is maybe why the boss missed it. He doesn't go through the business district often, does he?" Din's heart began to pick up. "No," he said slowly, "he doesn't." Boba had to be careful with the business district. Most of Mos Eisley was involved in some crooked business or another, but there were honest beings in the city, and there were rich ones, too. Boba could go through the gleaning or the Quarter with all the firepower he liked, but the business district was a tougher warrenut to crack. If Boba leaned too hard on its rich and powerful, he'd make his own enterprise harder on himself. No one in Mos Eisley had the power to dislodge Boba on their own, and as long as he kept credits moving through the city, most of Mos Eisley's major players would leave him be. "But if he disrupts their business too much, they'll start to look outside the city for help. Maybe even as far as Nal Hutta, if those major players had felt that they'd made more clink during Jabba's days." "A cantina in the business district," Din said slowly. "What's it called?" That made Geeta's mouth twist. "Gela's," she said. Din frowned again. "Gela, that's a Rillish name," he said, "right?" "It was a Rillish cantina," said Geeta. Her tone had gone a particularly tone of flat and disinterested, like it did when Gita was talking about something particularly painful. It used to be my sister's. Din's eyebrows went up. He and Gita kept walking. He didn't know what to say. He'd heard before that Gita had once had many siblings. Brothers and sisters, all of them trained to dance like Gita had been. Din didn't know what had happened to them all, but he knew that Gita was the only one left. That was why her mother had been brave enough, desperate enough, to ask Boba for help when Gita had gone missing. She hadn't had any children left. Gela was pretty, Gita continued, still in that same flat, disinterested tone. Din winced, she'd said, was. And sweet and smart. A man from the business district, some shipping boss, fell in love with her when she was one of Jabba's dancers. Bought her freedom, gave her the clink to do what she wanted. And she wanted to run a cantina? Din asked cautiously. He never knew how much Gita would tell him when she got like this. Gita lifted a shoulder. I was a kid, she said. I don't know what she wanted. But she bought up a little cantina front, fixed it up, named it Gela's Place. She did good business for a while. Gela's is right next to the shipyards. Din winced again. He knew what had happened now. Somebody had seen the cantina, liked its proximity to the shipyards, and had taken it for themselves. Either to make all of that clink for their own operation, or to have a place close to the shipyards to move illegal goods. Gela, Din guessed, had been in the way. I'm sorry, Din said quietly. Gita shrugged again. It's in the past, she said. I'll kill whoever's running the cantina now if you want, Din offered. He wasn't a contract killer, an assassin like Fennec. But he didn't like slavers, and he'd just be enforcing Boba's ruling. Boba had outlawed slavery. He'd outlawed huts, too. If this cantina really was a hut front, Din could kill two womp rats with one cartridge. Why does Siolo think it's a hut front? That made Gita smile at Din again, though it was a little more lopsided than it had been before. Don't worry about it, she said. Like I said, it's in the past. Sio said he'd case it out tonight if you want to join him. You can't miss it. It's the pink cantina right across from the Western Control Tower. Sio thinks, well, he's not sure, but he's pretty sure he recognized one of the bartenders, somebody who used to work for Bib Fortuna as Muscle. Din nodded. His focus was sharpening again. Former Muscle taking work as a bartender after Fortuna's empire had crumbled didn't mean that the whole establishment had hut ties, but it was a better lead than anything else Din had. I just might, he murmured, narrowing his eyes thoughtfully. Gita didn't have any other news to report as Din took her home. She didn't talk any more about Gela or any of her other siblings either. Din gave her her silence. They left the tunnels, coming out behind a ridge, and from there took speeders around the back of Mos Eisley and into the city. Din did a cursory sweep of the streets around Gita's little house, too. She hadn't reported any more strangers watching her or beings lingering outside her home, but they already knew that Gita was being watched. Din didn't find anything and went back to the palace on the sand road. Boba had lined it with guards. There were Tuskens, Shaking Mountain warriors who'd agreed to sign on with Boba's outfit for a season, in the ridges now. Boba was not in the throne room when Din made it back, but Fennec was. The rest of the room had been entirely emptied. Fennec had taken up in her usual booth, her map of the palace glowing in front of her, and she lifted her head when Din, and presumably the little tracking dot on her map, since he still carried the tracking fob in his belt, came into view. Gita home safe? Fennec asked. Din nodded and released the seals of his helmet, tugging it off and dragging a hand through his hair. Where's Boba? He asked. Fennec tilted her head, indicating a hallway that led deeper into the palace. Getting a report from Kasik, I think. He's fine. Din nodded, relieved. She have anything new today? Fennec asked, switching back to asking after Gita. Her tone was sour. None of my people have turned anything up, not even in Mos Eisley or Mos Gamos. I'm starting to think that Valerian is involved somehow. Mosantha's the only place we haven't karking looked. Din collapsed into a seat across from Fennec. For once, she hadn't raided the kitchens for Hanshun or Chuba stew. There was a single mug beside her datapad, but that was all. Maybe not the only place, Din said. Fennec looked up at him sharply. Dan leaned forward. One of Gita's friends found something, maybe. A cantina in the business district. Thinks it's maybe a hot front. We looked in the business district, Fennec objected. As thoroughly as you checked the gleaning? Fennec grimaced, conceding the point. Maybe not as aggressively, she allowed. Boba's had to take a careful hand there. What cantina? She said it's called Gela's Place, said Din. He leaned back in his seat, let Fennec take in the information on her own time. Fennec's eyes narrowed thoughtfully. I've never heard of it, she said. Din nodded. Neither had I, he said. Gita said it's across from the shipyards. What's the hut connection? Admittedly thin, Din said. Siolo, Gita's friend, one of the ones who's been looking around Mos Eisley for me, told her that he recognized one of the bartenders, somebody who used to be muscle for Bib Fortuna back in the day. That is thin, Fennec muttered. She rubbed her forehead. She have anything else? Din shook his head. Fennec cursed. Whoever we're dealing with, she said, they're a slippery little Duneworm. None of my people have any idea what I'm talking about when I ask around for a hot spy. Din drummed his fingers on the table, thinking hard. He had an idea, and it made his heart beat faster in his chest. Fennec won't like it. Boba won't like it. But we're not making any headway with the usual methods. We need to change things up. Din took a deep breath. He couldn't make himself voice his idea, not yet, so he just shook his head. I hate this, Din grumbled. Fennec made a sympathetic sound. I don't much like it either, she said. All of this waiting. Gorga should just make his move already. Din wanted another drink. Why hasn't he made a move already? Din wondered, instead of getting up and padding over to raid the bar. Fennec tilted her head. What do you mean? Din thought about it for a second, turning it over in his head. If I were Gorga, Din said slowly, I don't think I would have given Boba the chance to get back on his feet after the first raid. If Din had been Gorga, he would have hit Boba as hard as he could with everything that he had, and then he would have hit Boba again. Kept hitting until Boba stayed down. Until Boba fled the system or died trying to protect the palace. Din's stomach turned over. Good thing I'm not Gorga, he thought. He might not have the muscle, Fennec pointed out. Din shrugged. That was true. Still, though, he said, it's strange that we haven't heard anything since the raid, right? He should have done something. Hitting an enemy while they were already bloody, already bruised, was just good sense. Backing off until that enemy got strong again was stupid, inefficient. He should have, Fennec agreed, tone thoughtful. Maybe not another all-out assault, but something. If I were Gorga, I would have hit the shipping corridors, you know? Boba's called just about everyone else back here. There's some guards in Mos Pelgo still, and the spotted Anuba are still out in the desert, but just about everyone else has been pulled back to defend Mos Eisley in the palace. Din lidded his eyes and thought for a moment. You would have hit the shipping corridors as bait, he said. Fennec nodded. Would have tried to draw Boba out, she said. Get him out in the open. The palace is a tough war nut to crack. I don't think that Gorga can get the numbers to storm the palace again. But if I could get Boba outside of these walls, out in the desert somewhere... She trailed off. Din could tell by the look on her face that she didn't like thinking this way either. So why hasn't Gorga tried that? Din asked. He thumped a fist against his forehead. It doesn't make any sense. No, Fennec agreed sourly. It doesn't. These Twi'leks of yours, you think their information's good? They're not mine, Din said. He liked Siolo and Yuna well enough. Liked Gita more and more every day, if he was being honest. But none of them had managed to turn up a solid lead yet. And no, just the idea about Gela's place. Fennec groaned. You ever think, she said, almost conversationally, that all of this was actually a really stupid idea? Din snorted. He knew what she meant. Taking the palace, taking over Jabba's operation, it had been a bold move on Boba's part. maybe even a stupid one. Din wasn't sure they'd be able to shake Gorga off. They might all still die. "It's not what I would have done, no," he said. Fennec sobered. "No," she said, "it's not what I would have done either, but it is what Boba's done, and I don't know, I just hate waiting here. Waiting for Gorga to lash out on his terms." Din took a breath, gathered his courage. "I have an idea about that," he said. Fennec studied him. "And you're bringing it up to me," she said. It wasn't a question. "Not Boba. So you think that Boba wouldn't spring for it?" Damn her. Fennec was too observant for Din's liking sometimes. "I think that Boba would have some objections," Din said carefully. "I'm not lying to him," Fennec warned Din. "Not after that Kark with you and Geeta blew up in our faces." "In my face, specifically," Din pointed out. "I'm not gonna lie to Boba either. I'm just not gonna ask for permission." Din could... he could sort it out with Boba later. If this worked. If Siolo's lead was actually a good one. "But I could use some backup." Fennec narrowed her eyes. "I'm listening," she said. Din took another breath. His stomach rolled. This shouldn't be this hard, he thought. He'd already done this. He'd left his armor behind once already. He'd just gone the distance between Boba's rooms and the kitchens, but he'd done it. He could do it again. "I want to go into Mos Eisley again," Din said. To Gala's place. As me." Fennec stared at him. Din could see that she didn't understand. Din gestured at himself, at his armor. "As me," he repeated. "Din. Not the Mandalorian." Fennec's eyes widened. "You want to go without your armor," she said. "Want is a strong word," Din said, "but yeah." "Why?" Fennec said. You don't need to, Din. We've got... I have plenty of spies in Mos Eisley. Someone else can go check out Gala's. You don't need to be one of them." "How many of your spies know exactly what to look for?" Din asked. "How many of them are trained Baroya?" "Not many," Fennec admitted. "But, Din, without your armor, you're..." "I'm not saying that I'd go unarmed," Din cut in. "I don't need my armor to fight. I'll take a blaster, some knives. The darksaber, too, probably." Din had gotten too used to its weight to be comfortable without it on him now. "But no one, I mean, no one knows what I look like in Mos Eisley. I've never taken my helmet off there." Fennec paused. "How many of your spies can say that?" Din pressed. Fennec was frustrated, too. Din knew that she was. She wanted to figure out Gorga's plan, find his allies, eliminate the threat just as badly as Din did. "Boba wouldn't like it," she said. Din shrugged. "If it works, he doesn't have to like it," he said. Fennec leaned back in her chair and looked at Din. Her expression was tired, worn. "But not," Din thought, nerves twisting in his stomach. "Like she's going to tell me no." "Tell me one thing first," Fennec said. It was not a question. A hard edge had crept into her voice, tugged at some place in Din's chest. The same place that wanted to kneel for Boba, Din realized. Fennec had an Alo's voice. He sat up straighter, ready to meet her inspection. "Why do you want to do this?" Fennec said. "Really, it's not just to figure all of this out." Din hesitated, but didn't see any point in lying. Not if it made Fennec help him. Not if it worked. I want to know that I can do it," he said. Fennec said nothing. That I wasn't just a Mandalorian," Din tried again. He gestured at himself. That it's me that did the work, not my reputation, not my armor, not what other beings thought of me because they looked at me and saw a Mandalorian. I don't know if I ever was Mandalorian, Din thought. Not really, not in the right way. He didn't know if there was a right way to be Mandalorian, a true way of the Mandalore, if such a thing was even possible. But Din knew that the way he'd acted, prickly and suspicious, snappish and rude, to Boba and Kreese and Cobb Vanth, because he'd looked at them and decided they couldn't be Mandalorian, wasn't right. I was wrong about Boba, about Kreese. Vanth would make a good Mandalorian if he wanted to be. Fennec, too. And I don't like that my Allure lied to me. Din spread his hands. He didn't know how to say all of that, and if he said it out loud at all, he wanted to... I want to say it to Boba first. Boba was the reason Din had all of these thoughts in the first place. Before Din had met Boba, he hadn't even dreamed of thinking about the Creed like this, letting himself doubt it, doubt his covert, his Allure. Fennec finally inclined her head. This is a bad idea, she said. We've tried all the good ones, Din said. And it's not like I want to go alone, either. I want... If you want to come along and hide out on a rooftop or something, I'd appreciate the backup. I'm gonna be... Din stopped, shook his head. If he did this, he'd be defenseless. Not entirely, because Din had had so much weapons training that he was never truly defenseless, not if he could still reach a knife or a blaster or a sword, but more defenseless than he'd ever been when facing an enemy. He wanted someone watching his back. He wasn't going to ask Boba, because he didn't want to hear Boba tell him that his idea was carking crazy. Din was pretty sure that Boba would put a stop to the whole thing. He had gotten better about treating Din too carefully, but Boba was ferociously protective on his good days, and none of them had had good days lately. But Fennec... Fennec's a good shot, she's cool under pressure, she knows what she's doing, and she's my friend. And she wants to end all of this just as much as I do. Fennec must have seen all of that cross Din's face, because she just sighed and said sourly, "If you get shot, Jaren, I'll kill you." Din smiled at her. "It'll be fine," he assured her. "In and out, just long enough for me to check out a tip I got from Geeta. Then we'll come back." Fennec grunted and knocked back the rest of her spatchka in one long pull. "Fine," she said. "But I'm getting a bigger blaster."